Welcome back to the Upper Tier Podcast, the football podcast we bring you each and every week on the Dynamo Podcast Network. As usual, head over to YouTube, smash that bell notification and subscribe button. You'll also find us on Anchor if you like our audio shows, Podbean, Spotify. Wherever you pick up your audio shows, you'll find us there. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So if you want to hit us up, if you ever want to come on the show or have your opinion, you can hit us up there or PM us, whichever you suits. And joining me tonight for our Monday mashup, again, it's going well at the moment. We have these slim down Monday mashups at the moment. Anthony is making his return from YouTube, the Tosh Father. How's it going, Anthony?
Not too bad, lads. What's the crack?
Good to have you back on. You were missed. Obviously, joining me as well, supporting that silverware again. Mark, the sponsor of the show from Hogan Elite Trophy Hire over there on Facebook. Mark, how you doing?
How's it going, lads? Noel, you're outnumbered tonight.
I tell you, I'm used to it. I've been at it for 30 years. And also joining me, look at this man, the new headset, the whole lot geared up, ready to go. Darren, how we doing?
How you getting on, pal? Ready to rock and roll tonight?
Not about it at all. Well, I have to say, with the four of us on, it was a great weekend for United and Liverpool without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
Where do we begin, I suppose? Let's begin with our Premiership review. Nowhere better at the start than Chelsea West Brom 5-2. Anthony.
What a match. That was crazy, wasn't it? Couldn't believe it. I had a little side bet on, and I obviously had Chelsea to win. I thought, West Brom down the bottom of the league, you never know. But obviously got the notification saying West Brom goal, West Brom goal, West Brom goal. I was like, what is going on? Chelsea imploded, you know what I mean? They were, 10 games unbeaten, I think, until that.
Yeah,
and then to fall to a team like West Brom, you wouldn't expect it. But I suppose it's kind of good to see that, wasn't it? The bottom team is fighting for something at the end of the day. It's a bit crazy result, 5-2, mental. Obviously, with Silva getting sent off, probably a bit soft, I'd say. But look, it is what it is on football these days, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, those smaller London clubs sometimes tend to struggle against the bottom of the league anyway. So, it's probably not that surprising. I mean, he went on a real good run, but I mean, a loss was bound to come. They probably just didn't expect it against West Brom. Darren, where was that Robinson lad when we needed him against Luxembourg and Serbia?
Seeing the two goals, and the first thing I thought was, Swain did nothing for us. And then looked like an absolute baller. The two finishes were outrageous, man. The little dink, the second one, I was like, when did Messi just arrive here? Like, Jesus Christ. Now, I have to say, he's in a slightly better team at West Brom than we were. You know, he has that lad Pereira playing beside him who looks like a serious baller. If he could get a few lads around him, he'd be able to shout that kid, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And it's Big Sam all over, isn't it? Going and getting results when you absolutely least expect it. Like, we've seen Bolton do that for years. Turnover. They used to beat Arsenal for fun at one stage, didn't they? Big Sam, so it's JJ and Jorkaeff and a few of the boys like Ivan Campo and that. And they were just really hard to beat and they roughed you up and looked like a typical Big Sam performance, but they did well to get the 3 points in fairness to them.
Absolutely.
I saw a little stat though that you might like. Well, some of the United fans might like it. Tuchel took over and they were 9 points behind United. He's gone 10 games unbeaten and they're still 9 points behind United. He hasn't really set the world alight either. You know,
that sums up this season, the league in a nutshell, doesn't it?
I was
saying to a lot of Chelsea fans, I was saying, you are getting wins or grinding out draws, but there's nothing, I haven't seen anything really convincing about it, really. You know what I mean? Like, even when you go back and you look at the Atletico game, the one that was over there in Spain, like, it was a 1-0, but like, so many of their players didn't show up and they just kind of, they've been grinding out results, you know.
And like, I was expecting Timo Werner to score for you. I was texting my mate Duffer, who's a Chelsea fan. I was well expecting him to score for you. He was brutal. Jorginho as well in the first half. Do you see the amount of times he gave away the ball? So sloppy. Pulisic, I know he scored, but he was brutal as well. But like you were saying, it's funny, we're all talking about Chelsea being, you know, beaten, but West Brom played unreal. Obviously a big result for them at the bottom of the table. And it's like those performances, you think, how are they down there? But it's obviously when they're playing the teams around them that they can't get performances like that.
Yeah, this year has been a league of inconsistency everywhere, hasn't it, really, when you think about it? But we'll move on then. Leicester, Man City, 2-0 to Man City. Kind of, you'd be hoping for a draw, but, like, I mean, probably the Man City win is what you would expect. I mean, Leicester were in the game for a while, but once Man City turn up that notch, the quality that they have, you can just forget about it, even against a team playing as good as Leicester at the moment, you know. Newcastle Spurs, unbelievable. Kane with a chance to win it, can't do it. Joel Linton with a chance to win it, can't do it. Mourinho's pulling what little bit of hair he has left nearly off his head. And like, just going in on the players again, just after every match these days, seems to just pick a section of players and goes in on them, going, not good enough, throwing them under the bus. I think the writing's on the wall there, isn't it, Mark? What's your take about Harry Kane? I think he's going to go this summer, isn't he? I don't think he's going to stay.
Yeah, I think he will too. I like the fans, like when Jose was with us, they're getting frustrated with him, with the way he plays. And so he does it at every club, but other clubs, he obviously won trophies, but Kane will certainly go. There'd be a bit more for him, especially like we were talking the other day with the financial fair play being scrapped. The clubs can pay anything they want for him. So it's only a matter of time. But yeah, we just give a shout out to Graham. We're missing you tonight. I know you probably have less hair than you did last week. So
yeah. I think he's happy enough. Didn't Pat get away yesterday? I've seen him.
Yeah.
He's a bit chirpy, all right, on Facebook.
Yeah, it would be nailed on that the Pat's jersey would be on tonight if he was on our
roster. Yeah. Yeah.
It was interesting that he had to work an extra hour during a bank holiday Monday, you know.
Sure, they close at 2 o'clock. What's he talking about?
Yeah, he actually messaged me after the Chelsea result and he says, here we go, the door open for us again. And I said, you're speaking too soon, mate.
And on the other end of that, Bruce, that's after giving him another few weeks in the job as well, you know. Obviously, if the fans were there, they'd probably give him loads of stick because none of them want them there. But it was a very good point for them, you have to say.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. United and Brighton 2-1. I think if Brighton had had that little bit more quality up front, they could have done a lot more in the first half. They had loads of chances. United didn't show up at all. The usual players you would see there, the likes of Bruno and Pogba, pretty much anonymous in the first half. Come out in the second half, obviously got a dressing down from Solskjaer at half-time and started playing the ball around. Fred started dropping deep to take the ball off the likes of Lindelof and Maguire to play the ball through instead of the lads hoofing long balls. That's Brighton's bread and butter day in, day out. Darren, what was you thinking on this one?
Yeah, exactly what you said, man. Lewis Dunk just loved that first half, didn't he? I mean, we just lamped the ball up. We don't even have anyone that can win the ball in the air, you know. We don't have that kind of Lukaku, that kind of Ibrahimovic anymore. So I know Cavani heads the ball quite well, but I don't think he holds it up as well as the other lads do. First half, we were absolute dog shit. And that's the nicest thing I can say about them. It was great to come out in the second half and get a result because, you know, with the way things went at the weekend, getting a win yesterday almost secured Champions League football for me. It was a really big result, but the performance was very, very poor. I think they just grinded it out in the end. But it's nothing to write home about, to be honest with you, man.
It's a recording team, though, isn't it? We'll start. Sorry, Niall. Either go one behind, or we'll have a really poor first half and then come back in the second half. Mm. It's no disrespect to Brighton, but Man United obviously have that little bit more talent than the Brighton squad.
Mm.
But if Brighton had been up there in the talent caliber, then God knows what would have happened.
I suppose my issue is, and the only issue I have with Solskjaer, you know, I think he's doing a decent job in his defence. Mm. I think we're still probably 3 or 4 short.
Mm.
But really the style, I don't know what style we play. You know, you could watch 10 United games in the bounce now and we'll play maybe slightly different in each of them. So tactically, you know, I know he wants to try and play, counter-attacking football. He's not going to play counter-attacking football against Brighton at home.
Mm.
Like the positive for me was that he didn't start with Fred and McTominay. He started with Fred and he started with Pogba and Bruno because you don't need two defensive midfielders when you're playing against the likes of Brighton at home. It's okay if you're going away to Anfield, but you're not if you're sitting at home against Brighton or West Ham and you're playing Fred and McTominay gone. Let's keep it tight here, lads. That just makes the two lads at the back and the keeper look like, why have you got two lads in front of us? Are we a bit shaky? And all of a sudden they start to look shaky, you know?
I read a stat there yesterday after the game saying, is it United They've had 27 points that they've won from losing positions. That's a phenomenal stat. That's incredible to show the kind of resolve that the team has. But I know where you're coming from, Darren. When you look at them yesterday, I mean, the first goal was kind of, it's not United playing their style of football and scoring. Like, the first one was a clearance that got deflected into Bruno's path. He ran on with the ball, squared it to Rashford, and of course Rashford just puts it away into the bottom corner, bread and butter from. But again, it was kind of like that kind of dodgy kind of mistake again where the ball falls for you, as opposed to you ripping teams asunder and going in. You didn't seem to have an answer in that case. Mark, what was your thinking on it?
Yeah, looking at it, like when we played City a few weeks ago in the Etihad, when we actually start in the front foot, we play much better football through. We obviously knew what way Brighton were going to play. They were going to sit back and they were looking for that long ball over the top or whatever. Wan-Bissaka, top ball watching. I think he's probably played too many games this season. I don't know what you think, lads. He's no one really to cover him over on the right-hand side. Obviously, like I said before, Brandon Williams is sat in there. But listen, fair play to Brighton. You look at Brighton again with West Brom, you think, why are they down there? You know, they gave us a game in the Amex that time at the start of the season. They've gone to the Emirates and places and got wins this season. So it was a tough game. There was no airs or graces, no real performance. But we're at the business end of the season, and what matters is the 3 points, and that's all you can take from it.
Absolutely.
I think, sorry to cut across, you know, I think Brighton could do something similar to Villa next season. Villa just survived. And then they really, really kicked on. I don't think they have a Jack Grealish in their team. I think they have lots of decent players. Conley, Trossard, Maupay, Dunk, Lamptey when he's back fit. I think they're probably the style they're trying to play. They're trying to play football, you know. And they probably quite haven't got exactly, you know, all the square pegs and square holes. But I think your man's doing a decent job partner with them.
Yeah,
I think next season you could see them, you know, maybe 10th or 11th up there, 9th, something like that. I think they should be all right.
I don't think that's going to happen, because I think what's going to happen is a lot of teams are going to come in and raid their players. The likes of Yaman Basuma, who's very impressive. Likes of Ben White, very, very impressive. Maupay up front, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, like, I think they're going to lose a lot of players, and I think they're going to go back into a rebuild job as well, because if you think of those players that are there, the likes of Ben White and Basuma and all those, like, you know, they'll probably get 30, 40 million for them, no problem, you know what I mean? And they'll definitely cash in. There's not a shadow of a doubt.
Ben White's been linked with us, hasn't he?
Absolutely. And I heard you're interested in your man Basuma as well. He's outstanding. Like he basically ran the show last night.
He's box a massive engine on him.
Box to box.
Massive engine. Yeah.
Like I seen that one. There was one stage in the match last night where he picked up a ball just outside his own box, and he literally just ran through a horde of United players to the other end of the pitch. Like, just incredible.
Lads, I just want to ask you, what did you think? I just thought, I don't think Rashford looks fully fit at all, to be honest with you.
No, don't think so, yeah.
No, he's waiting for that operation, isn't he? The shoulder operation. I don't know how much impact your shoulder operation is going to have on what you're doing with your legs.
But maybe
it's a mental thing that he feels that he's not fit. And he's just a little bit. Because for me, I would say, you're talking the last 4 months maybe, he's been very, very poor. The finish was great last night. But his all-round play is nothing short of dreadful, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
See, I suppose the fear is you might be only a tackle away from being out for 6 months. That's the problem with him, isn't it? Like, and that's probably where that fear comes from. But he doesn't look like he's moving in any way fluent at all, or, you know what I mean? It seems like everything is a struggle at the minute, you know what I mean? And even that normal real good link-up play with Luke Shaw and all seems to be a little bit disjointed at the moment and stuff, you know? So, But yeah, I mean, he's out anyway. Apparently there was an ankle niggle, and boy, he was out as well because apparently he contracted COVID or something like that. So
Because
there was a lot of questions being asked yesterday about boy missing and stuff like that, but people obviously didn't realise, you know. So then we move on. Arsenal versus Liverpool at the Emirates. For me, it's just Liverpool going into the Emirates as they do and doing, making a professional performance as they normally do down there. There's always bags of goals in it. And I was talking to the lads on, shout out to the lads on Republic of Arsenal. Give them a like and a share there. They're on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and all that. I was on their show there the other night and we were talking about it. And I was saying, look, if we show up, the gulf in talent is unbelievable. You know what I mean? I said, it just means we need to show up. But I thought the real key to the match I mentioned the other night would be Fabinho. And it turned out he was absolutely, between him and Thiago, they were absolutely outstanding the other day. And I said to the lads afterwards, I said, you know, if that had been 6 or 7-0, it wouldn't have flattered us. Because if we had lads that were there finishing, I thought it'd be a cricket score.
How bad were they at the back though, Harrison? Even see Leno for that Salah goal. He just went straight through him. Like, he should be doing better than that. I was texting my two brother-in-law saying it, like, they're going mad over some of the decisions. Like, they showed no passion. They didn't go out second gear, Harrison, when you look at it. And obviously, like you said, you could have had a lot more goals if you had a few more finishes there.
But even, like, I was even saying to the boys, even apart from their defence, like, I mean, the midfield of Odegaard and Partey and all, non-existent. Mm. Aubameyang, non-existent. 350 bags a week, non-existent. More concerned about his braids and his pink Lamborghini than playing football, you know what I mean? And even Lacazette just doesn't look like he wants to be there, you know what I mean? It's just, Anthony, what did you make of it?
Yeah, it's typical Arsenal, isn't it? It's typical Arsenal all over. Piss poor. No one's showing up. When you've had attitude problems in the team, like we're saying with Lacazette, Aubameyang worried more about his hair. And similar could be said for Pogba as well, but we're not on to that. But when you've had attitude problems and people aren't interested, all you just do, you know that they're getting paid at the end of the week, and that's all that matters. And then you get results like that, and then what happens then?
Yeah,
like,
and I mean,
do they get rid of Arteta and completely ruin what they've built, or do they just stick with him and then see what happens and just get results get worse, or because I can't see it getting any better, to be honest with you, for them.
Well, the thing I was looking at, Darren, and you might want to take this. We spoke about financial fair play and stuff like that, but I mean, with the way financial fair play is going to go, I mean, Arsenal, in order to become competitive again, they're going to have to sell the likes of Smith Rowe and Saka and stuff like that to generate the money to rebuild. Because Aubameyang ain't going to go anywhere. No one's going to take him on 350 bags a week and stuff like that.
Not on that, no.
And then the other players...
Aubameyang's in the same...
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say...
Aubameyang's in the same bracket.
Yeah. Go on, you go.
We play tennis here. Aubameyang's in the same bracket as De Gea now. We'll have trouble shifting De Gea based on his wages. Because for me now, yesterday was a massive statement for Solskjaer. De Gea was back, you know, he was available and he went with Henderson. You know, and I think he was right personally. I think we're at a crossroads at United and he needed to go down the route with Henderson. But Arsenal are going to be in a similar problem with Aubameyang. You know, you've got a group of young lads there, some very, very good players at Arsenal. Smith Rowe, Saka, the lad Martinelli that plays on the left is excellent, Kieran Tierney. You've the other lad, the centre-back that's on loan in France, another good footballer. Very, very good players. You know, is it good for them watching a guy like Aubameyang coming into training and the way he carries himself and, you know, the petulance? And I don't think so, man. But I think they've put a massive rod in their own back, because how are they going to get him out of there on 350 a week now, you know?
Yeah, I was saying to the lads as well that the players that you do want to get rid of, the problem with them is they're not going to generate enough funds to get you back competitive again as well. Yeah. So you're going to have to sell your prize assets. And that's a real problem, because then have you got the confidence that, one, let's suppose you go out and you sell Saka. I mean, there was reports coming out today saying they might have to sell him in order to rebuild. So let's suppose you sell him and let's suppose you get 100 million. Like, are the board actually going to give Arteta the whole 100 million, like the way we did with Coutinho, with Klopp, and we gave him the 140 and we bought Alisson and we bought Van Dijk? You know what I mean? I wouldn't even have the confidence that he'd see most of that 100 million anyway.
I don't think he'd get near 100 from either, by the way. I think he's a smashing little player, but you're talking 50 to 60, because you're putting him in the same sort of bracket as Grealish with 100 million, and Grealish would dance all over him. You know, he's a good player, but he's not anywhere near the finished article yet for me. And 60 million, would you do enough for it with Arsenal? I don't think so. Because like you said, that's going to be a drop in the ocean compared to what they need. Arsenal need 200 million.
Yeah,
they seem to really strengthen all over.
Yeah, they seem to be in this loop of, you know, constantly bringing in maybe one or two players, and then they lose one or two players, or one or two players drop off. But yeah, I suppose the risk we spoke about the other night as well, again on the same podcast, that like, if they don't cash in on Saka, and if he gets, like, he's an Arsenal boy true and true, there's no doubt about that, but with financial fair play going, he was ever a club true and true, you know what I mean? And I think if he gets frustrated there, and I was saying to the boys, the club has to match the ambition of its youth that's there now, and if they don't, they could end up losing Saka on a free. They could end up losing Smith Rowe on a free. They could end up losing Martinelli on a free. You know what I mean? And then they're still trying to convince your man Odegaard, who I know came out and said, you know, apparently he was quoted as saying that he was using Arsenal as a springboard to get back into the Real Madrid team or something like that, you know? So he kind of had no real intentions of being at Arsenal anyway. And he, like, he's a very good player, you know what I mean? Mm. But they were made the other night. And I know they were missing key players, like obviously missing Xhaka and David Luiz. I know we often go in on them and say, ah, sure, look, you know, David Luiz, crazy, you know, and Xhaka, sure, he's not really that much good. But it's only when you're missing that sort of experience that you see how you get ran ragged. And, like, we absolutely pressed them to bits. They had no chance the other day at all. They never got a sniff of a ball. But it's worrying times for Arsenal, you know what I mean? Because it's this big club mentality and this whole attitude of entitlement and stuff like that, you know what I mean? That needs to wake up very quick to where... otherwise, you don't even become a mid-table team. Sometimes you fall below that again, you know?
Niall, when you were talking to the lads, what are their feelings on Arteta himself? Like, because I know there's going to be a 50-50 split coming soon, like, with all their...
It was the same on the podcast, and I looked at their reaction as well. The reaction was some of them want Arteta out because they don't think he's good enough. But the problem is then, who'd you get in? I mean, if you bring in the likes of an Allegri, I mean, okay, you're bringing in that bit of experience, but I mean, you're going to play very negative football. And that's not going to work if your youth are coming through who want to express themselves and stuff like that, you know? But the other side of it is, like, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, whoever gets sacked in the club, it's always the manager, isn't it? It's never the players.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that would be very worrying. But look, sure, we'll move on to the European scene then. And, I mean, this was more important. This is what I'm saying to the boys as well. It's very important to get a result this weekend and be very positive because you're going into a European week then, you know. So you want to carry that form in. I mean, it's going to be very hard for Arsenal to just turn it on now against Prague come Thursday. After being in that position, you know. But yeah, big games coming up. I mean, obviously Liverpool tomorrow night playing Real Madrid in the Bernabeu. That's going to be a massive game. But I think, you know, if we go out and we express ourselves the way we did before, you know, there's no reason why we can't get at them and come away with a result there. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, I suppose the argument is he has to start Jota, doesn't he? He really has to start at this stage. Yeah. You can't put him on the bench. Like, it's just...
You see the difference he made when he came on the other day against Arsenal?
Absolutely. I was saying it. I even quoted it there on Twitter the other day when James Pearce put it up on his Twitter. I was saying, when Jota comes on the pitch, the whole front line just comes alive and the midfield. Just as like it gets this boost. So, yeah.
It'd be interesting watch for the neutrals because he's obviously aren't the same Liverpool Madrid team as you were a year or 2 years ago. So it's going to be a very interesting game. God knows what way it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge European toy, isn't it? It's two super heavyweights in terms of European football and all, you know. But it'll be interesting. Man City are obviously playing Dortmund. So it's obviously, this is the advertising show really for Erling Haaland. I was looking at it there the other day. I don't know if you've seen what leaked out of that Barcelona meeting from last week with Mino Raiola.
His wage and 20 million for him, 20 million for Alfie Inge Haaland. He was like, going mad money a year and then on top of the fee.
Yeah. So mad. You were looking, the fee is what, the release clause is what, 45 million or something like that?
Yeah.
So it's 45 million. 20 to Mino Raiola, 20 to Alfie Haaland. The DAF are just tagging along. I want that gig. And then this other lad wants 30 million in wages net a year. Net, not even gross. You're looking at nearly 700,000, 700,000 pounds a week. And I was just looking at that and going, you may stay at Dortmund because I don't think anyone's going to be touching that. And I quoted it on Twitter there today as well on the upper tier saying, if any club comes out and pays that, that would be the death of football. There's no doubt about it. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I don't think anyone's going to be in a position financially to do it. You know, especially on the back of this virus and with not having fans in the ground for maybe 18 months. You know, there's clubs taking out loans left, right and centre to try and get through everyday business. So a guy coming in and putting his hand up and saying, listen, I'll come, but I want, even if we say, you know, 500k a week, like that's, you're right, it's the death of football if it happens, you know.
Well, the problem there as well is how many players have you got on your books as well whose contracts have to match whatever the top paid player is as well. So not only if you bring him in on 500 bags a week, who else is there maybe on 350 or 400 that has to be brought up to 500 as well because of their contract? That's prevalent in football at the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I just like the 20 million. Like it's
Well, he has him down as an advisor now. He has him down on the books as an advisor. So,
Bow Boys are advising him very badly because what's being leaked, it looks terrible. If it's true, of course. Mm. But I mean, you're not going to make up numbers like that. You know what I mean? Mm. It's absolutely crazy. You got Bayern Munich and PSG. Obviously, I think Neymar is out, isn't he? Got injured or something like that, I heard. And Lewandowski's out as well. So two huge names out for this game. Kind of throws the tie a little wide open when both those guys are missing. Any thoughts on that, Anthony?
I'd put that down as the tie of the round, to be honest with you. But them, those two lads out, like you said, it blows it wide open. Who steps up? Who puts their name forward and says, I'm the match winner. I'm the match winner. You know what I mean? Well, either way, it's a cracking match.
Mbappe is definitely one. I mean, you've seen what he did against Barca.
Neymar
wasn't there, you know. So, but certainly an intriguing toy. And then we obviously rounded out with Porto and Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea are going to really need to up their game there from Saturday in order to put in a performance against Porto, because as we said already in previous episodes, these are no pushovers either. These score goals, and they've got some top players in that team there. You know what I mean? They've really been the dark horse of the tournament. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, it's not like they don't have history in the tournament either, you know? Moving on to Thursday, we touched on Arsenal versus Prague. I mean, obviously Arteta with a huge job now to pick those guys up. You would assume hopefully some of the players are probably back for them. I mean, because for certainly on this show anyway, for the neutrals, we'd be hoping for an Arsenal United final, wouldn't we?
And for Arsenal, it's win or bust. This is their season. now, you know.
Granada versus United. I mean, Granada are kind of the unknown. They've come out of nowhere and they seem to be playing lovely football this year, but you know,
they got battered yesterday though, didn't they?
Was it 3-0 or something?
Like a 3-0 by Villarreal yesterday.
Villarreal are a very good team.
Yeah, they are, in fairness to them. Yeah. They're very decent. So Villarreal are one of them teams in Spain that can literally beat anyone on any day. If they show up, they can be unplayable.
Yeah, I didn't look at that match. I didn't look at the detail on that match yesterday. I wonder if Granada were resting a few players.
I'd say the likelihood is there was one or two of them sitting on the bench thinking, we're just getting warm for Thursday, you know?
Yeah, I just wonder if that had an impact on the result, even though Villarreal are such a good side.
But they do, like I said a few weeks ago, they concede a lot of goals, and I'm talking against the likes of Levante and all, not the bigger club.
Yeah.
They do as well. So we need to go out there and play like we did against Sociedad in the last round and get off on an attacking foot.
They're a little bit of a Newcastle from back in the day. They're the entertainers, you know, they'll score and concede in equal measure. And I think that'll play into our hands, to be honest with you. We're relatively good at the back, and we will take chances going forward, you know. I think Prague will knock Arsenal.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm going to be putting money on that.
Good show.
100%.
Here we go. You're here to hear first.
100%.
Exactly.
If you want something this week, Prague will turn Arsenal over. I don't know if it'll be this week or the next week. Prague will go through in this game. They're a far better team than Arsenal are. And I put emphasis on the word team as opposed to group of players, you know?
If that happens, like if Arsenal go out, is that the end of Arteta, do you reckon?
I wouldn't say so, to be honest with you.
I don't think so either.
No, I think they'll stick with him. Yeah.
I think they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, aren't they?
Because like you said, Noel, who's going to come in if Allegri came in? It's a totally different way of playing. You know, you're starting from scratch all over again.
I'd imagine it's also a different set of numbers on the paycheck every week as well.
Exactly.
Allegri's one of those Jose kind of managers, isn't he? You know, he likes lads 28, 29, 30, loads of experience, slows everything down, blocks it up. Do Arsenal want to go that route? No. I think if they were going to be mental enough to get rid of Arteta, they've got to be looking at, you know, the likes of maybe David Wagner in Germany, the likes of Nagelsmann, someone like that, who's going to coach the core group of players that they have to be a better team, as opposed to just, you know, here's money, let's go out and bash it about and we'll try and buy our way up the league, because we know they don't have that, you know?
It's either that or Geoff Wenger and Pat Rice back.
or Wenger and Paffiera.
Yeah, there you go.
I think the problem is, as well, is if they do push the button on Arteta, it's going to cost them maybe 20-odd million to get rid of him, and that could be potentially another player out of their their pot, if you like, for this summer, if you like, you know, which would be very concerning. Let's move on to the hot topics then. Manchester United launched their Sea Red campaign this week in terms of, you know, identifying racism and calling it out. And, you know, it looks like they want action on this. We've spoken on this podcast a number of times about these campaigns, and especially about social media, how it doesn't do enough to sort this kind of stuff out. They're kind of caught a bit between a rock and a hard place in terms of, you know, controlling people's data and identity and all that kind of stuff. Mark, what was your thinking on the campaign?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant to watch the video. And if any football fan out there, if you get a chance to watch it, you don't even have to be a United fan. But it's great to see all the memories. Like they said, the title winning season, Andy Cole got it. You wouldn't have that. You wouldn't have had the Dwight York hat-tricks, the Rio Ferdinand winners against Liverpool. It's a fantastic video. Every club, I think, should be doing it. And it just sends a great message out. Hopefully, it will have an impact, but only time will tell.
Yeah, you see, I suppose the problem is, you know, there's a lot of clubs in the league that are, like, you know, known for this kind of stuff that goes on. You know what I mean? And obviously, you know, a lot of the reactionary stuff that you're getting on social media at the moment as well, a lot of it is when players don't perform or when teams get beaten. It's not necessarily when you're winning. You know what I mean? So,
Callum Robinson, going back to him, he scored 2 goals at the Bridge the other night and he got abuse on Twitter. It's unreal.
Yeah, but that abuse, more than likely, that abuse wasn't coming from within their own fan base.
Oh, yeah.
We probably have a fair idea where that abuse came from without mentioning it. You know what I mean? But I just think, I often wonder with the campaigns, you know, I think it's brilliant. I think any campaign or any kind of thing that clubs launch that helps it in any way is a brilliant step forward. Yeah. But I just think it's, you know, we'll just have to see again how it evolves and how, again, these things work in practice, as opposed to, you know, it's brilliant putting up a video and you see Andy Cole and Dwight York and all these players and they're banging in the goals and they're lifting trophies and the United fan base is delighted, you know what I mean? It's a different story if you're going down to Stoke on a wet night and you get hammered and everyone goes in on you and loses the rag and become keyboard warriors and stuff like that, you know. So it's very hard to judge it, but I hope the campaign has a lot of success. And as you said, I hope a lot of other teams and clubs in all the divisions launch similar campaigns to really get it going, you know.
Just something you said there, Noel, about it being reactionary, you know. I'm on a United forum. And yesterday, something the lads did was for the hour before and after the game and during the game, they stopped all posts. So what they did was they allowed stuff to be posted on a particular thread. So they had a match day thread and they said, for the next 4 hours, you can post in here. What you can't do is you can't put your own post up. Because I'm a United fan. The forum is full of United fans. But even on a match day, it's just head melting, the stuff you're reading. And you're like, you know, like you've got a lad, he might be the best player on your team. And he puts a sideward pass wrong. And all of a sudden they're jumping on him. And you're like, lads, he's put one foot wrong. Can we not just, you know, judge him at the end? Like people don't judge players at the end of seasons now. Yeah. Or they don't judge them at Christmas or in the, you know, they're judging them after 15 minutes of the game and they're like, you know, Johnny over there, he's fucking terrible. You know, you're like, no, he's not. It's the best player we have. He's having a bad game. But, you know, let's not throw him in a scrap heap because he's had a bad night. You know, Wayne Stoke on a Tuesday and it's pissing on him, you know.
Have these lads ever played football? Because we've all been there. We've all played schoolboy football or whatever. Everyone's had a bad game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the problem is once people start typing, they just absolutely lose the run of themselves. And I think from Darren's point of view, that's a good idea because, you know, it brings back that reactionary stuff, you know what I mean? Because, like, I mean, take, for instance, yesterday's game against Brighton. You could have went in on the whole team at halftime and at full-time you win the match 2-1 and you get your 3 points. Mm. It's just a total wasted exercise, you know what I mean? Like, this lad said yesterday, they could have slaughtered Wan-Bissaka for that goal. You know what I mean? And then... You know, at the end of the day, it's 2-1. You pick up your 3 points and everything's rosy in the garden. But what people forget is what they posted 45 minutes ago or 50 minutes ago out in these players. Like what are you saying about Terry Henry having to get off social media? Because it's just, you know, it's just
nonsense. I wonder if there's something that the likes of the social media, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and whatever could do like that. So let's say, you know, I'm a Premier League player and I have this blue tick or whatever I have, you know, and I'm legit, as in they know it's me. Maybe I put forward some sort of identification or whatever I do. And for the period of the day of a game, I can't be posted about, or I can't be DM'd, or I can't be something, which means then the person in question has a whole day to stew over. And by the time you sleep on and wake up the next morning, they've forgotten about it completely. And you don't get
I don't think they should be able to be DM'd anyway.
No.
Either way, well, regardless.
See, there's a lot of good comes out of stuff like that as well, isn't there? When you see, you know, sick fans and bits and pieces like that. But no, I suppose, maybe on the day of a game, if they just said, listen, you know, even if I type it and I press send, it doesn't go. It doesn't go until the day later.
Yeah.
And at that stage, everyone's cooled down. Everyone's chilled the beans. They've had a night to sleep on. They've gone, you know what? It's a game of football. Yeah, we love it. But it's not the end of the world. And we really don't need to be at this show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't the whole team walk off yesterday over it as well?
Valencia. Valencia. Yeah. The Akabi was abused, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think the only thing about the line like that is, does it kill the kind of passion and the romance that you have for the game? You know, like when we talk about VAR, you won't celebrate a goal now until VAR confirms it's a goal. And by the time they confirm it, you've moved on. You don't want to celebrate it. It kills that. You know, that moment of joy that you have as a fan. And the problem that you have is it's such a small amount of idiots that are carrying on like this in terms of this stuff that's going on. You know what I mean? What do? You sort of stymie the whole fan base, that they take the love and the passion out of the game because of this small section of the fan base that are just idiots and could potentially not even be your own fan base. This is the problem because of the identification. Like you look at, say, whoever was Robinson, who was being abused this week. I mean, is that likely that it was West Brom fans? No.
Highly unlikely with him scoring two goals away at the Bridge League.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we, do you know, you'd have a fair idea where that's come from. It's not even come from his own fan base. So what do? Do you mute all those fans in the ecstasy of beating Chelsea 5-2 and hold it off for a day when you've lost momentum and gone on? Or do you try and figure out a kind of slightly different way of doing it? You know what I mean? So that's because we always want to keep the romance and the passion in the game. And we want people to be fired up at times and be passionate about their clubs. But the choice of language and how you approach it is critical to whether you love your club and you love your players or not, you know, and that's the key thing on it, you know. Yeah, but yeah, look, we'll monitor how it goes and hopefully other clubs instigate other campaigns. Look, any campaign like this that goes out there, if it's tangible and it shows action, then it's a success. It'll help in any way, you know. Move on to something really controversial this week. A man who I admire greatly, Mr. Jamie Carragher, Cara, comes out with his top 10 Premier League strikers. I sent this on to you all earlier and I said, let's have a look at this and come back to me. Anthony, take us through
it. What's it taking? I don't know. You could ask 100 people and I guarantee you 100 people could have 10 completely different strikers on that list that could maybe say, well, they're a million times better than he is. And so on, you know what I mean? But it's Carragher, isn't it? He's a bit of he comes out with some stuff like that, and then you're left debating. Like, you might even question yourself then, like, oh, is he actually in the top 10? I don't know. There was questionable people in there anyway. Put it that way. I don't know.
There's certain ones that you look at and you think, how did they leave him out, like, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I think the lads will agree. Ruud van Nistelrooy, how is he not on that list?
Yeah.
When Niall sent it to me, the first thing I wrote back to him was Ruud van Nistelrooy, and he said that's exactly what Mark said.
Yeah.
He's back at the exact same time on that with Ruud van
Nistelrooy. He's comfortably the best striker United have had in the Premier League years. Comfortably. Yeah, yeah. And he had York and Cole ahead of him. Mm. And I was like, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Old King Cole, who needed 15 chances to score one. Mm. And you have him ahead of Van Nistelrooy. Yeah. Yeah. Like, 95
goals in 150 games. Like, what was it? The 10 games in a row he set, and it was only broken by Jamie Vardy only a few years ago. But I think also a lot of United players overlook Van Nistelrooy. If you ever see some of the United greatest 11s and all, the amount of goals he got, and they weren't all great. Obviously, a lot of them were in the 18-yard box, but he was such a clinical finisher. I don't know to see how he's not on that list. Like,
he was that typical fox in the box, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, Alan Shearer did a lot of that as well for years, and he was absolutely outstanding, you know what I mean? And sure, if you were to judge strikers on whether they score from the box or that, you look at Bruno with all the penalties. Yeah. You think he's not a baller at all, and he's a super player.
But then there's other ones you look at, the likes of Kevin Phillips, Defoe, Teddy Sheringham. Remember, he scored the first goal on Super Sunday for Forest against Liverpool. But, he scored, he had two spells of Spurs, he had a spell with us, then he went to the likes of West Ham and all, and he was still banging in goals. But like you said, it's everyone's personal preference.
Right, well, here's a question for the three of you. Is Thierry Henry number one?
No.
No.
Okay, so who's number
one? Don't think he's a striker for a start. I don't think he's a striker for a start.
Well, he became one, didn't he?
You'd have to say Shearer.
He's a little bit forward, but he's not a striker.
He's a winger, yeah.
He's closer to a winger than a striker.
Yeah.
Because on that day, this is where Ronaldo then.
And he's a cheat. But, no, but you'd have to have Shearer. He's the top goal scorer ever in the Premier League. Shearer has to be number one. Yeah, as a football fan, everyone would agree with that, I'd say.
Yeah.
He'd be there for me anyway, yeah.
I sort of looked at the list and I looked at sort of like, was he picking players that he played against or players that he played with? And, you know, what way did it kind of line up? Because I noticed, like, you know, Drogba was in there at number four, who absolutely tortured him. Shearer at number three, Aguero at number two. I kind of looked at the list and, yeah, I thought there was a couple of names kind of could have went on it all right, but I was looking at even like the ranking of the names. Like, you've Harry Kane out there at number 10, and I was sort of thinking, did he just look at the stats, or did he look at the actual teams? Like, if you look at Harry Kane at the moment, look at the teams that he plays in, you know what I mean, and then take that into account. Whereas if you look at, say, Andy Cole or Dwight York, who played in fantastic United teams, you know what I mean, who had all the sports. You look at Didier Drogba. Look at the Chelsea teams that Didier Drogba played in. You know what I mean? And then you still look at Harry Kane and with the record that he has, and he's played most of his life in mediocre Spurs teams that struggled at the best of times, and he was a shining light, you know? So it was kind of like, it was weird looking at, you know, Sergio Aguero, you know, playing all those great Man City sides, you know what I mean? It's just... So I don't know whether when they're looking at these things, do they just purely look at goals or goals per game or, you know, goals per minutes played and all this kind of thing? Or do they actually look and go, well, you look at Harry Kane there, you know, absolutely outstanding striker, you know what I mean? But like, played in bang average Spurs sides all his life, you know what I mean?
Like you said, Noel, I think a lot of it to do with players he's played against. Like, Drogba gave him an awful time when he played against him, and he probably never really played against Harry Kane. Probably basing it a lot on that as well.
Do we not always in our head think the guys we play against were slightly better than the lads that are there before you and after you? Mentally, like, you know, you go, oh, I played against such and such, he's the best baller I've ever seen, and then the fella you're watching down the park, you're like, oh, he's good but he's not your man. We just do that. We make that mistake for some reason, you know.
Yeah, but then if you take Mark's point, he has Alan Shearer at number three, who would be number one on most people's list.
He'd be number one on my list. I think he's got a few of them right, like, you know, Drogba. I think I'd have Drogba up there with Aguero, with Shearer. I think we need to mention our own lads. I think Robbie was unlucky not to get a show for the top 10. Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
I know we're talking about Premier League, but, like, taking into account the international goals as well, like, Robbie's up there with the best strikers that have been in that Premier League over the last 30 years, if you ask me.
I suppose when you look at Robbie Keane, although he had a very, very good career and was a real good goal scorer and stuff like that, you know, if I told you to give me five or six top moments, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to sit there and you're going to go, okay. Whereas if I said to you, give me five Van Nistelrooy moments, you'll name them off like that. You know,
cool,
what I mean?
But Van Nistelrooy played for a decent team as well, didn't he? You know, a team that was winning stuff.
Like, as you said, Liverpool.
Robbie Keane's a little bit similar to Harry Kane. He played in very, very bang average teams.
Well, some of them.
Well, pretty much all of them, I think.
I wouldn't say all of them now, but some of them.
He was a poison when he was there, weren't you?
He was poison when he was there as well.
Got that screamer against Arsenal, didn't he?
Yeah. So I suppose we'll agree to disagree on the ratings, where the ratings are.
Yeah.
A couple of names that should go on there as well. Jurgen Klopp came out this week talking about Virgil van Dijk and turned around and said that the decision for him to go play internationals in the summer is out of his hands. I was sort of thinking, like, this is the club who pays his wages week in, week out. The man's been out practically all season in recovery. I wonder, would Klopp have the same opinion if Virgil goes and plays for the Netherlands in the summer and comes back broken down again? What you thinking on that, Mark? Start with you, probably.
When I looked at it, I think it's a psychological thing. I think they're just putting him in the squad to have his name in there, and then obviously closer to the time, if he's not fit, he's not going to play. Because I can't see him after not playing with you since, what, October or something like that, is it?
Yeah.
I can't see him playing for them over the summer. But like I said, I think it's a thing that the manager has to put him in the squad and then pull him out rather than, you know, because I think there's a certain time before you can call players up or something like that. But for me, it's that case again. Liverpool play his wages. I know they get a few quid to play for the country, but you're only representing your country. Like, but yeah, it's gonna be tough for him to come back to full fitness before the Euros. Like,
so in a situation like this, Anthony, I'll probably go to you on this. In a situation like this, do you believe the club should have the call, or do you believe the country should have the call?
The club, I'd say, but. If the club, nobody would be playing international football, because no club would want their players going off if they're going to be coming back injured, and if they're fighting for relegation, if they're fighting for top of the leagues. Yeah.
Well, no, I think in a situation where it's like, you know, if you're playing away and you're playing football, then that's fine, and you're released to play for your country. But I think in a situation like this, where a club has lost a top player for practically a whole season, you know what I mean? And financially, they've supported that player through his contract and everything. Is it not inconceivable that the club should be able to turn around and go, listen, we want to cotton wool this lad for the summer. We don't want him going off to the Euros. We want him back for next season. And I understand that the country, and I mean, it could be a player thing as well, that a player is passionate enough that he wants to play for his country as well, you know? But it was.
Amazing. You know, the club should definitely have to say that. Like Van Dijk, if that happens, if he comes back next season, then he goes off for the Netherlands again, then gets injured again, and probably is out for just as long, if not longer. This is the entire season, rather than being in for a few games. Yeah, I agree that the club should have a say whether he goes off, and then like you said, wrap him up in bubble wrap. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
protect him a little bit.
I'll go to you on this, Darren, but my view would be, like, you know, even if he was back playing since February and he was going to play from February through to June, you know, I'd have no problem if he's playing. But the fact that, like, he basically hasn't kicked the ball this season, you know what I mean? And then he's going off to a tournament to represent the country, and that's fine from a patriotic point of view and stuff like that. But I mean, in terms of the club, what's your thinking?
He's the club's asset. Yeah. You know, the club have paid a massive, massive transfer fee to include him in their squad. It's slightly different from the international point of view. It's a little bit like look at the draw internationally, you know, you get what you're given type of thing. I can understand why the Netherlands want him there. Even from Van Dijk's point of view, obviously he wants to go and represent. Maybe he's looking at it as, I've been sitting on my arse for the last, you know, 6 or 8 months. Maybe he even goes and looks at it as a fitness exercise. And he's training with the squad every day and he's getting stronger, fitter. But as for game time, you know, if I'm Liverpool, I'm absolutely livid if he gets any game time at them Euros and my asset gets compromised, you know. I was really, really annoyed last week when Rashford was on international duty with England, considering he wasn't able to line up for us in the last game before we went the break, you know. And I kind of thought to myself, why hasn't someone pulled the plug? There's a rule for the international teams which allows them to call up the player, you know, even if there's a discrepancy over whether he's injured or not, based on what the international team think. But why isn't that the same for the club? Why can't the club say, now, hold on a minute here, lads. You know, if you look at it in certain players, if someone's played 50 games in a season and they've been, you know, they've done all the travelling with it and they've done everything and they just are jaded. Some players just need a rest. You know, now I know that comes back to what we talked about, the international calendar and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But for me, like, Liverpool have got to be able to say, Virgil van Dijk is our asset, and we're not putting him into a situation where he's going to be compromised and it's going to leave us in a, you know, in a really negative position going into next season.
Yeah. I suppose as well for the international teams as well, there's huge sponsorship behind these teams as well. And you can imagine, like, if you're like Pepsi Cola or Coca-Cola or something, that you're sponsoring one of these teams going into a big final, you know, you're going to want the likes of Marcus Rashford there at the front of that, or Virgil van Dijk or whatever it is, you know what I mean? So it's hard to take them out of it as well in terms of these deals that are done as you head into the finals of these tournaments and stuff, you know? So, but it's it's definitely one that's we're keeping an eye on in terms of how it transpires over, especially over the next two summers. Next thing I wanted to talk about was Celtic. We've had a chat about Celtic already and what's happened with Neil Lennon and stuff like that. But it came out this week that it looks like Eddie Howe is the shoe-in for the job. I personally think that's a very good choice. I think Eddie Howe is a very good manager. I think he was very unlucky at Bournemouth, to be honest. I think he did a marvellous job at Bournemouth there for a good few years, and I think he just got very unlucky. But it was interesting that they came out and said that Keane had failed because they wanted a name and a track record. And obviously Keane, he obviously carries the name, but the track record, especially at managerial level, leaves a lot to be desired. Mark, what was your thinking on that?
Yeah, like I was saying, the last one, like Keane, he got Sunderland promoted, did well, went to Ipswich. But I think he'd done a good thing in stepping back and becoming a number two, learning his trade a bit more. So I do think he jumped into managerial, the management too early. But from a Celtic point of view, Eddie Howe would be a great choice. You know, at Bournemouth, he probably had a similar budget to what Celtic would be working with, even though I think they'd be in Europa League at this stage. But what he done with Bournemouth with the younger players, and then he got a few of the experienced players in, like the likes of Jermaine Defoe and stuff like that. But I think Keane, I don't know, he was linked to the Salford job that time before I think Bowyer came in, Gary Bowyer came in. Like I said, has football, you know, management outpassed him? I think it has. I think he's, like I said, he's great at the punditry, and I'd miss him from that. And I just think it's past him at this stage.
Yeah, Anthony, what was your thinking on it?
Yeah, you obviously look at Eddie Howe's experience with Bournemouth, bringing the lads up, having four or five cracking seasons in the Premier League. Obviously a poor season last season to get relegated, you know what I mean? But he'll be probably one of the best managers that they've had in a few years, since Brendan Rodgers, you know what I mean? But Keane obviously controversial, causes murder everywhere he goes. Like Mark was saying, the punditry is the place for him now. But Eddie Howe is if it's given to him, great choice for Celtic, Richard.
Yeah, it's great. Moving on to the next point, it's great for you three boys being Man United fans. Inter Milan came out this week, said if Lukaku is leaving the club, they want 120 million. And apparently,
Stamford's first or second touch?
probably the second touch, because that's the one that normally goes in. Apparently, Man City and Chelsea have expressed an interest. But I'd say once they were told that 120 million, that interest probably evaporated very quickly. This sounded like the club that we know that are in a bit of financial disarray at the moment. And it was an interesting number that was pitched for Lukaku, but I don't see anyone meeting that number. Any of you boys think that number would be met by anyone?
No.
Not a chance.
No.
Nope. Okay. I think if you gave me two of them, you wouldn't reach that fee.
Yeah. Lukaku and Sanchez, you can have both of them.
I think if you threw the two brothers in, Jordan and Romelu, you wouldn't get that over.
Yeah, so then an interview was had there the other day with James Cooper of United fame, predicting that United, he thinks, will only have 100 million to spend in the summer, pending outgoings. What was your thinking on that? I mean, when you see the numbers that are being bandied around at the moment on players, I mean, that's literally, what, two players maybe?
Even Max, if that. Look, if even.
Two with a push, yeah. One and a half.
Yeah. Well, you're just talking about Lukaku being 120 million. Imagine what's going to be available.
Yeah, I'd imagine then United won't be going for Mbappe or won't be going for Erling Haaland or any of those type of players. But it was an interesting number. That's what he reckoned, 100 million, because of the impact. He says the impact of COVID has been massive on Man United, which we know that's the case, especially with match day revenues and stuff like that are normally enormous. But yeah, it'd be interesting considering what United still need in order to bridge that gap with City. And we know City are going to go spend, obviously, with Aguero leaving and stuff like that. City are definitely going to go out and spend in the market.
I heard Pep saying they're struggling for a few quid as well, though. Yeah. I don't know how cloak and dagger that is.
That's what I thought was mind games when I first heard it. I was thinking they'll get a cheeky bid in for Kane or Haaland, you know.
I think they'll throw money at something up front, won't they? But again, I know we spoke about it as well. I'd be absolutely shocked if City don't sign Danny Ings on a free. I'd be shocked.
He dropped that interview about 5 hours before Mena was due to arrive into Manchester for talks about Erling Haaland. So that to me is just Pep. They can't be short of money. What did the 10 oil rigs go on fire recently that we didn't read about or something like that? You know what I mean? That's not the case.
Nothing like a good insurance job, huh?
Absolutely. this has kind of got a feel of a Man United show tonight, you know. Berbatov came out there during the week and said that Aguero should do a reverse Tevez. Now, we've 3 Red Devils on here tonight. Would you take Aguero?
Probably not, to be honest with you. Probably not.
You're not having a man, do you know?
No. I don't know. Just a couple of injuries, you know what I mean? The last couple of seasons. He's been out for a long while with him, if you total them all together, you know what I mean? Mm. So to pay his wages and to have him on the bench most of the time as more of a Cavani kind of thing, it's not worth it in the long run. Like,
yeah, okay. I agree. I wouldn't have made it, to be honest with you. If you'd have given him to me 3 years ago, I'd have taken your hand. But now I think he's just a little bit too far over that hill. And I think City know what they're doing and letting him slide. I don't think there'll be a queue of massive, massive clubs to take him in. I know his name's been mentioned at Barcelona, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him go back to Atletico.
Mark?
Yeah, I take him and just put a poster out, welcome to Manchester. That's the only reason I take him, to be honest. listen, I think with him and a lot of South Americans, I think they're always going to end up back home. I can see him going back to Argentina at some stage and just finishing out the last few years, and it's more of a sentimental thing for them, isn't it? Like Anthony was saying, we don't need another kind of striker getting a mad amount of wages to sit on the bench and get a young striker in, and you know, we need a centre half as well. But
we've probably got that young lad Jesse Lingard coming back in the summer as well.
Young lad.
To make a difference, you know.
Like I was saying, he's playing with England under 21 say during the week I was watching him, you know.
At least he was given the opportunity to go off to West Ham and learn how to play football, so it's not too bad. It's true. Like, you know? That's it. It was an interesting idea. I'd like Aguero probably to stay in the Premiership. I mean, surely to God, there has to be a couple of mid-table teams out there like Arsenal and Everton who would be interested in him. You know what I mean? So,
does he end up replacing Kane at Spurs?
That's an interesting one.
Him and Jose, Kane maybe swap Spurs for City and Aguero swap City for Spurs.
I'd say if that was the case, they probably would have done a deal in January.
I don't know.
It's an interesting.
I don't think it's out of question. Mm. But again, I still think I think he's had enough of England, hasn't he? Like the South Americans like that. I think they do a little stint, and then he's done a good stint. In fairness to him, been a top player. But I'd be shocked if he doesn't end up in Spain getting a bit of sun on his arse cheeks. You know.
I think he said about three or 4 years ago, he said his plans were to go back, maybe to Boca Juniors, I think it was. It was his plans to go back at that time.
Yeah. They all seem to be interested in going back there, but in reality, then it doesn't seem to pan out the way people think, you know. I don't know. Maybe a season or two down in London, he might fancy it, you know, something different.
The other option is the MLS. You know, some team over there take him in and be, you know, the likes of Galaxy or Inter Miami or something like that.
Inter Miami himself and Gonzalo up front.
Yeah, that's it.
Could they lead them to a championship?
You never know. There'd be big money over
or
there.
Or a Stanley Cup, whatever it is this week.
Stanley Park.
A green jacket, maybe.
Stanley Cup or a green jacket. Love it. So we'll finish up. Martin Keown. Or Martin Keown, I should say, came out and is calling for Aubameyang to be dropped in favour of Martinelli, which I think for most people looking from the outside in seems to be a given, but whether Arteta will have the strength to drop him again outside of, you know, just for playing reasons as opposed to not showing up late for a match or something like that. But then I suppose, where does the captaincy then go? Because, I mean, you're going to be looking to put the captaincy on someone, you know what I mean? And then, you know, Tierney obviously hobbled off the other day. I don't know if it's a serious injury or if he's going to be out for a while. Certainly, he would have been one that I looked at. But should they'd hardly throw the captaincy back on Xhaka or something like that, would they, after what went down?
No, couldn't do that.
You've only really got two options there for captain. You've Tierney or Partey for me. I don't see it going anywhere else. I think you give it to Tierney as club captain, and then you play game to game. If Tierney's not playing, maybe you throw it on to Partey or something like that. But for me, they look like A, their two best players, and B, the two that are going to be there, you know, the longest possible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's a, again, another conundrum for Arteta, really, isn't it? Like, it's just...
You can't pay him 350 grand a week and stick him on the bench is the problem. Because you can't do right from wrong then. You know, if you don't do the results and he's sitting on the bench, 300K, that's, you know, he's sitting on your shoulder then.
That's the point I made to the lads the other night on the Arsenal podcast. I was saying, I can't see him dropping him because, like, imagine they had dropped him the other day and we had done what we did anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd be all saying, oh, you dropped Aubameyang. This is the problem. Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. They'd be going in hard on him, you know. But certainly you're coming into a very ropey time for Mikel Arteta. And for Arsenal in general, you know, they're in danger of becoming, you know, proper mediocre if they're not careful, you know. But as always, lads, always a pleasure on a Monday night to come on and chew the fat about what's going on in football. As always, head over to YouTube, smash that subscribe and bell notification button on the Dynamo Podcast Network. Again, head over to Anthony's page on YouTube, the Tosh Father. Get in there and support him. Also, Mark on Facebook with Hogan Elite Trophy Hour for all that silverware for your special occasion. Also, you'll find us on Anchor if you want the audio versions of the show. So for myself, Mark,
cheers, Anthony, Noel,
and Darren, it's been a pleasure as always, and we shall chat to you again soon.
See you again, lads.